you haven't watched TV, but we could talk about that Axel F there. Hello and welcome to episode 418 of We Were Gamers, a podcast where we start with things that are not games at all and end with games. So hello, JJ.
Hello.
Hello, Michael.
How you doing?
I'm doing all right. It's a wonderful, nice, cool, brisk day. No longer heat wave central. So who can complain? Who can complain? JJ, I thought that Axel F was fine.
Mm-hmm.
Some comments about how people look in their old age were not good that I saw on the internet reviews.
Yeah.
You know, it's been like 30 years since the last one. Let's take it easy.
Hey, man, people get older.
They do. They sure do.
Yeah. A lot of, hey, remember this guy?
Yeah.
Going on in that movie.
The show made a lot of the relationship between Axel and the kid and, like, how he messed up as a dad. So, they harped on that one quite a bit as the main point of the movie. And I feel like the older movies didn't have, like, running through line themes like that one did. But other than that, it had all those, like, remember these moments types things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if you wanted another Beverly Hills Cop, it's there to watch.
Yeah.
That's my opinion.
I think that's pretty close to where I fall to. It was like, hey, once they, you know, dispensed with the plot, which you weren't there for anyway, it was a good enough one of those.
It's just nonsense.
Yeah, it's like the leaps in deductive logic and that anyone believes his BS sticks.
Sherlock Holmes is
like, yeah.
Well, there's definitely moments in it where he's like, I'm too tired to do my shtick. Like he's trying to get a free room at the hotel and he's like, you know what? Just what's the price of a hotel room? You know? That was amusing in a smiling kind of way. All right. We're already started off with Axel F, so let's just dive right into it. The Emmys were on Sunday. And tastemakers that we are, Shogun won everything.
Yeah.
I mean, best actor, best actress, 14 other things about dramas. First non-English show to win in that category. Pretty cool. Good job. Everybody was voted correctly. You all did well.
I think I heard someone speculating that they intentionally ordered a second season of Shogun to allow it to qualify for this. And I was like, is that how that works?
I think
they can cancel it?
That's a good question. I don't know. But I think it gets nominated for a limited series if it's just going to be the one season and done.
Oh, so it wouldn't be in drama?
Yeah, because it wouldn't be a series. It would be it wouldn't be a drama series. It would be a limited run series or something.
Look, man, the Emmys is where lots of people play shenanigans. I don't know if you heard, like, I think it was the beginning of this year, the Emmys were taking away Emmys from people because ESPN was playing shenanigans so often with who was on what and where in terms of, like, giving people producer credits that, like, barely even worked for Disney.
Yeah, stuff I remember like that. Hearing about that. It's
Yeah,
that's a whole thing.
I got a bone to pick with the Emmys, though, and Michael, you got to defend it. The Bear falls into the comedy category because it's half an hour. Or is The Bear a comedy?
Yeah, so this was debated on NPR this weekend. We were listening to some of Film Week, and they did an Emmys preview, and one of the topics that came up was the categories that the Emmys use for their nominations, and do some of those categories maybe need to be rethought and revamped in the nature of television today not always being so clearly delineated into comedy or drama.
Yeah, well, I think of people that, you know, have wrecked lives and need to put them back together. Comedies that come to my brain quickly are things like Schitt's Creek, you know? Like, that's a comedy where people's lives get destroyed and they have to build themselves back up. The Bear, people's lives get destroyed and then he builds himself back up. I'd compare those two and tell me which one's a comedy, unless you're, you know, talking ancient Greek.
Yeah, I mean, one of them is the Schitt's Creek being a good example, given the hosts this year. But that's an example.
I'm not an idiot.
Where the comedy is almost farcical, right? Compared to The Bear, which has its moments of comedy, but they are really trying to craft a story that is relatable for people, and you know, real life has comedy in it. But it's not all comedy. And sometimes you find comedy in, you know, in the strangest or darkest of moments. And I think The Bear does a good job of reflecting that, of holding that mirror up, but it makes it very hard to categorize as one or the other.
I did read about this before bringing it up. I'm not trying to jump on a bandwagon or anything else, but I try to listen to my friends when they talk about things, you know. And I, you know, was listening to some people's opinions about why they, you know, would define it as a comedy. And one of those things mentioned was, oh, yeah, finding funny things in dark places. And people mentioned stuff like when she crashes the car through the wall, or when this happens or when that happens. And I said, I wasn't even amused smirking at most of the things people said were funny. Maybe it's like a third level funny where it's like, oh, thinking back on it, it's kind of funny, like you would in real life. Like, oh, thinking back on it, remember when mom crashed the car through the wall? Like, you know, I have moments like that in my real life. I'm not going to say what they are, but like, I still don't look back on those things and laugh. So I still have a hard time calling The Bear a comedy, especially given some of the best moments of The Bear are not about it. Like, you know, there's very little laughing in that episode, Spoons, right?
Yes.
But it's one of the best episodes of television I probably have ever seen. And then there's the whole of season three where it's like, this isn't funny at all. And it's actually getting me kind of like very anxious and I don't feel like watching anymore.
Yeah, I think they did. I think they did something just on The Bear. I think they did something a little different with season three, in that they leaned a little harder into setting up a two season arc.
Yeah,
right. As opposed to the first two seasons being a little more self contained, season three really, I think, is going to need season four to really bring it to some sort of bigger conclusion.
I think one of the reasons I keep giving it a shake is because Hiro Murai, I think, is creative on it, and he's one of the drivers behind Atlanta. I don't know if you ever watched Atlanta.
Yeah, we got partway into it.
That is what I feel like maybe they started off by going for, Atlanta, where it's like, oh, it's a comedy, right? Atlanta is very stressful and has a very deep storyline that is real life, is based in the stress of failure. It's all sorts of stuff. But like, then there's supernatural elements, there's comedy elements, there's lots of other stuff going on at the same time. And if I, that's another one I compared The Bear to, and I was like, okay, I like The Bear as a drama, in a way, although a lot of the characters, very dislikable. And it's funny that they turn a lot of the dislikable characters into very likable people, which is a good thing. I think that's the point, obviously. Yeah. Anyway, weird that it was in comedy, but
the conspiracy theorist is entering the chat.
Yeah, and here we go.
The Bear assigned themselves as a comedy because they thought they couldn't beat Succession in the drama category, and so they could win in the comedy category.
Dang. Well,
there you go.
I have never seen Succession. That's going to hold back my statement that the Bear probably could have beaten it because it's a half hour show and everyone's watched it versus people like me that Succession. I'm like, I can't get into it. I don't have time.
But you can see that it has picked up many Emmy wins over the last few years.
That is true.
So
that is true. Yeah. Yeah, it reminds me of what was that show that was ostensibly about Marky Mark that wasn't with Jeremy Piven in it? Entourage. Yeah.
Entourage, yeah.
Yeah. That Succession is not about the same thing, but the drooling over it reminds me of the Entourage days. Say, hey, if we're talking about food, I don't know if you guys, Michael, do you know what chow chow is?
Chow chow. Yes, I do. It's a condiment.
Yeah, it's like a almost like a
relish.
Relish, yeah, like a pepper relish almost, or like, yes, a tapenade of peppers.
Yes, I am a fan.
Okay. I discovered it years and years ago, and I had found a place in LA that was making it, and I don't know what happened. Oh, they ran out of stock. This place was so popular. They ran out of stock one year, and I forgot to order it. I usually ordered it around Christmas time and gifted it to people because this lady was making this one with olives in it, and it was amazing. They're out of business. I went back a year later, and they're out of business. Just boom, gone.
No.
Hmm.
That sucks.
Yeah. Have either of you kind of found things in recent years that kind of, since I guess maybe COVID was the impetus for this wonderful woman to make this stuff in her kitchen and sell it, you know, I was reading articles about how, you know, restaurants survived COVID by doing this sort of online sales, and we were talking a couple weeks ago about how I had to go to that influencer restaurant because everyone loved it, and the only way I could buy lunch was to not wait an hour and buy online. The experience of finding something new and good is good, but at the same time, are we going to run people out of business because they think they can survive selling things online, and then when they either run out of stock or they run afoul of regulations in certain places or whatever, they're going to get run out of business?
Hard to say.
You're going to have to think about it, huh?
Yeah, I think running an online business is actually just really hard these days. So many people are captured by Amazon. They're just like, Amazon, beep, boop, boop, order, whatever, right? So, you know, how is Little Susie's Bakery online going to get any traffic?
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, your friends and family will go there, or if you have a storefront, maybe you can get some people there, but like, people don't go to places generally, you know, there's not a lot of like walking areas where people just walk by and are going to go into a bakery or whatever. So it's tough. It's really tough out there.
All right, Michael, a follow-up question. Do you know how to make chow chow?
I'm sure I have a cookbook downstairs that has a recipe in it for it.
All right. You're going to need to send that to me.
Okay. I'll look it up. I have a couple of cookbooks that I would look in first to try and find that for you.
Excellent. While we're on the topic of advice, I need some advice, gentlemen. We're going to do it live, on air. I was sent an email this afternoon. ESPN Fantasy Football wants me to know that a trade proposal in my league is in my inbox.
Oh, okay.
Mm. Yeah. And I've considered it, but I think it's a no, but I don't know. I famously picked up Jordan Mason last week, or the off waivers before last week, and have used him remarkably well since. They would like me to trade Jordan Mason. So already we're off to a good start. That's someone I could consider trading. I've got a good running back core, and unless one of them gets injured, I don't need him long term. And he's not going to be around long term. So, okay, I'm all ears.
All right.
We start off, you both know I have Cup, We start off weak with an offer of Puka Nacua.
Ooh, okay. Mm. Okay, yeah. Out 5 to 6 weeks.
Out 5 to 6 weeks. Followed up with a 2-for-1 Stephon Diggs as well.
Okay, I mean, he's playing. He seems to be doing well.
He is playing. I don't know if I have Cup if I want Nacua on the team also. even though Cup will also be out. He's not going to help me cover my Cup problem, but Stephon Diggs would help me cover my Cooper Cup problem. I don't know that a straight trade Mason for Diggs is a good idea.
No, yeah, I don't think the value is there for
that. I was going to say the Houston offense has not been clicking enough for that.
And even if it was firing on all cylinders, that would be a too many mouths to feed kind of situation over there.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I'm left with, I don't think so, but I wanted to throw it out there, you know.
So the trade is, to be clear, Nacua and Diggs for Mason.
For Mason. Yeah, for my Mason. Yeah. I think I decline.
I think the trade would only make sense if you think Mason goes away as Nacua comes back and like Cup is also going on IR.
Yeah, Cup hasn't been designated yet, which is a problem.
Yeah, I think that to me is what would decide it, is if it's looking likely like Cup is gonna head towards IR, then Nakua's value shoots up.
Is it though? I mean, he might be back off IR around the same time as Nacua. They said it's a high ankle sprain. That's only like 4 to 7 weeks, they said. So Who knows? I haven't seen any new news today, but you know, I've got 1, 2, 3 starting running backs easy, so I could give up Mason. I've got not great wide receivers, but I don't know that Diggs is a great wide receiver. I don't know. I think it's a no, but I had to run it by you since it happened just before the podcast.
Yeah. There's merit, but yeah, I think it requires too many boxes that are currently unknown to be checked in order to guarantee the value, right?
Okay.
Well, also, sorry, just generally on the top of fantasy, generally, if you're trading, you really don't want to be the person getting players.
The two. Nope. You never want the two of the 2-for-1, right?
Now, sometimes you can find a trade where it's like, I give you this guy, you give me that guy. And those are usually the kinds of trades you want. Or like these two for these two. That kind of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, he wants to talk about, you know, Chris Godwin. You know. I think that's a no. But he's sitting on Lamb. He's sitting on Lamb and Godwin as his starting wide receivers. Right. So he's thinking the same thing. Well, how did everyone do? I don't want to take up all this time with just my team.
It was a good week for me, although it was a nail biter. Both of my games, my Guillotine League and my Standard League, came down to the Monday night game, which is not the best feeling. I wasn't the lowest in the Guillotine, but I wasn't that far from the lowest, and that's a bad feeling.
Yeah, I got to pick up a few more points in next week.
Yeah, the person who got cut had Saquon, so I'm going to obviously try and go for that. But then that makes my team like kind of a lot of Eagles players, which doesn't feel very good.
Yes.
Yeah, he's got some other wide receivers. Maybe I turn it back around on him. Be like, you want to give up that Jameson Williams? Maybe we'll talk.
How was your week, Michael?
Both of my teams did well. One of my teams basically blew the doors off. I had north of 190 points between Adams and Kamara and Cook and Godwin all going over 20 points, and Kamara over 40 there. It was pretty much over by midday on Sunday. The other matchup came down to Monday night. And I needed Hunt to outscore Saquon Barkley, and he did. And so I managed to squeak it out. So I am 1-1 in the first league and 2-0 in the second. Nice. But the injuries are starting to creep in. So this next week is going to be interesting.
Yeah, my league, my standard league, I have Cup, and so that's going to be a scramble drill over there, I think.
Yeah, I have Cup and AJ Brown.
Ooh.
So,
oh man,
yeah, it's and that's the three wide receiver league too.
Oh no! Oh boy.
So we'll see. I drafted wide receiver heavy intentionally. And it's looking like it might pay off, because I have some depth at the position to backfill in the meantime, but we'll see how it goes. My opponent this week, fortunately for me, has Tua as his starting quarterback and Love as his backup quarterback.
Those are not good.
So he's struggling at the top spot right now. So we'll see what happens come this weekend.
I picked up Baker Mayfield on a whim last week on the waivers, and I'm feeling pretty good about it.
I think that's an every week starter right there. You just slide him in there and never move him.
There you go.
His team looks like they're going to be throwing all season.
I still think, Andy, you're talking about running backs. You got Bucky Irving?
I do.
Do you? I'm asking.
Bucky Irving. No,
he's the backup to Rashad White on the Bucks.
Okay.
He has increased his playing in, you know, from the first game to the second game.
Sure.
And, you know, the people on the internet are like, hey man, this guy looks better than Rashad White. He like is faster, has like way two more yards per carry, you know, and is like doing, it also catches passes and stuff that Rashad is not doing. Like, this guy is going to be the guy in a couple weeks is what people are thinking.
Interesting. He still only saw half the snaps according to these stats. If I put all the running backs together,
but you know, if you're into stashing, that would be a guy to try.
I might be into stashing. If I could get this guy to give up a good receiver. I mean, he's got really good receivers. Did I read you the list on his team? It's crazy. Hold on.
You said Lamb and Godwin. Those are both pretty good.
Yeah, and then he's got Jameson Williams also. He's got three players in the top 10.
Cool.
Yeah. I mean, I also have three running backs in the top 10, so I'm not saying that's not unusual, but anyway, Michael,
what you got?
Speaking of unusual, have you run into anything unusual in Forbidden West lately?
Not unusual, but an old favorite, let's say, from
so the opposite Zero of unusual.
Dark. The opposite of unusual. It's getting back to business as usual. I got some time over the weekend to dive a little more into it and came across my first stealth infiltration mission.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, which is a favorite of mine. You take a break from hunting giant mechanized dinosaurs to take out a nest of angry tribesmen who are trying to destroy your city.
Not my city.
No, not you
over there.
trying to destroy the city whose help you need to make progress.
Nice.
So yeah, it's fun to, you know, there's a patrol out front, but oh look, they have their fortress is sitting on top of a river, and there's not a trellis over the water entrance, so you can swim right into the back.
Convenient.
Uh-huh. And oh, who left this giant cannon taken from one of the big mechs lying around back here? Guess I'll pick it up and see what kind of damage I can do.
It's like they wanted you to do it. You're just leaving it there. They're just leaving it there. That's funny. Very cool. It's still hitting all the high notes, I assume.
Yeah, it definitely is. Still having a lot of fun with it. This particular one, and I don't know if they'll do this again, had a fun little wrinkle that I don't remember if they did in the first game. There's a prisoner inside the fortress, and mm-hmm. if you free him in the course of your explanation, he'll start fighting alongside you.
That's cool.
So I got to the end of the mission where you're supposed to take out the leader of the fortress, and the guy, you know, I had backed up and was targeting him because he had a shield, and the guy comes charging in and just like takes him out with a hammer swing. I'm like, well, I guess the mission's over then.
Flawless victory.
It was pretty hilariously unexpected.
I still need to play those games. I have them on this PlayStation here. They gave me one of them for free. I still hadn't had the time.
I haven't played the second one, but that first one is pretty good. It has like a great story too. It's actually like, you know, despite all the open world stuff, it's actually like a really good story game too.
Yeah. It does. And it's, you know, it's hard sometimes for a story to sort of keep you guessing on how it's going to unfold. And I think they did a good job with that first one of putting together a story that you don't necessarily know where it's going until you get there.
If people who first saw that game figured out what they were doing from like the marketing and stuff, my hat is off to them.
They need to go to the stock market.
Yeah, dude, those people are like next level IQ, because I doubt you would be able to figure it out. Now, maybe like once you've started playing for a while, you can kind of pick up where it's going, but there's some twists for sure.
I'm excited to see. I've been trying to play new games, actually, over here. But I was trying to do it on my phone, which was a bad idea, because it turns out I think I need a new phone, you guys. Mine is full literally all the time. Just all the time. There's nothing I can do about it. I've deleted as many apps as I can get by without. And just installing games on my phone takes up so much room, it starts freezing. I was trying to play some games to talk about from Apple Arcade, and I got the game installed, and it was like, not enough space to run the game. You need space to run the game. I'm like, what?
Are we sure that it's only games that are taking up space on the phone here?
No, we're not sure.
I'm looking at pictures, mostly.
It's text messages nowadays. Because they store the pictures in the text chains, even though you've downloaded the pictures into your docs. And unless you want to delete your whole text chain or go into each text chain and delete the photos individually, I mean, it's kind of crazy. I think it takes up like 13 gigs on my phone, just texts.
All right, that's like pretty sizable. But I mean, how much storage does your phone have? Surely more than like 20 gigs.
60?
Okay.
But with app sizes nowadays, I mean, what is Octopath on my phone is 7 gigs.
Yeah.
The OS is probably 15, 16. You know, we're already over half.
Yeah.
Kind of crazy. I think I might need to upgrade to one of those newer phones. Maybe with the iPhone 15. I have an 11, so 5 years? When did an 11 come out?
Couldn't tell you.
Yeah, I can't remember these days anymore. It's got to be like 5 years. They're on the 16 this year.
I'm looking at my phone, and I have 128 gigs of storage, and 67 are used. So, yeah, you know, I'm in there.
Yeah, see? Without even thinking about it, you're over the 60 that I have. I don't even think they sell 64 gig phones anymore. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, I think that's also part of it, right?
Yeah, I think 128 is like the lowest I've seen. And that's for an iPhone, probably, which will, you know, of course, always be somewhat technologically conservative.
Here, hold on. I can delete these videos of my Octopath clears and clear up like 2 gigs. Let me just do that.
Oh, at least, yeah. Welcome to the party, pal.
Nice.
All right. Well, while you're clearing out photos, you should also tell us about clearing out Tyranid nests.
Yeah, we talked about it a little bit in last pod, but I think it's worth going back into some.
Oh, my God. Can I interrupt you?
Yeah.
One of the new colors for the new iPhone 16, JJ?
Mm-hmm.
It's blue, and it's called Ultramarine.
A standard color, not an unusual color.
I'm just saying, it's very funny.
It's not like they called it like bone ash white or gunmetal.
Oh, we should tell Michael what we're talking about. Michael, Games Workshop, who makes Warhammer 40K, which is Space Marine, right? They have their own paint line because they're a hobby store at heart, right? And they want to provide you all the things to make all the money off of.
Of course.
They have their own paint line. And every single color is like 4 words long. I think white might be the only one that just says white. Even then, it's like starlight white.
And that's just like the pure white shade. Obviously, you want to use like bone ash for the bone colors. And that's not white, you know?
No.
And then you have, you know, like off-white, which has a different, equally silly name.
Well, there's like long debris gray, but that's different than Space Wolf gray that has a light bit of blue in it.
You know, or there's the metallic versions, right? There's like a gunmetal gray, which is different from like a dark steel gray, which is different than, you know, like all those other metallic ones.
But blue is not just blue, it's ultramarine blue. Not to be confused with aquamarine.
No, different colors.
Yeah.
I think ultramarine is a color, though, right? Like that's
it
is a color.
It is. Yeah. Ultramarine is a color. I'm just saying, don't confuse it with aquamarine.
And it is also a faction of Space Marines, which is bringing us full circle here.
Yeah.
We talked about this a bunch yesterday, but we might as well, or yesterday, last pod, whatever time.
Last pod, buddy. It's been a whole week.
How does time work? we talked about this last pod, but, you know, Andy, are you aware of what's going on in the story in 40K these days?
I mean, we talked a little bit about it. Yeah, they're, like, bringing Primarchs back. All the bad Primarchs are back. There's new Space Marine called Primaris Marines.
Right.
They're on a new crusade. There's a
led
whole bunch
by
of stuff going on.
The Primarch of the Ultramarines.
Yeah. Rubut Guillemon.
Yeah, the Gilly Man. He supposedly claims that he spent a day talking with the Emperor on Terra.
He sure did. He sure did claim that.
Yeah.
I told you last week that they're setting him up to be the new Emperor. And you were like, that's heresy. And I said, okay, man.
Well, no, Andy, this is what I learned, is he's not the new Emperor, but he's leading the forces in the Emperor's stead, almost like a guy you might call like a War Master or something.
Interesting.
Uh-huh. But he has a different title. It's not War Master, obviously. Couldn't use that one. That's
no.
Yeah. But, you know, and he's doing all this stuff. Very interesting to see where all of that goes. But, you know, effectively, the head of the Ultramarines is the guy in charge of the entire Imperium these days.
Yeah, what are you going to say no to him? Are you crazy?
No. So it turns out that, like, you know, the Ultramarines, as they are very ascendant in the lore.
They're the first ones to get the Primaris Marines as well.
Of course. Yeah. They are. It does say Ultra right there. Like, that means they're the most. the most Marines.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They're the most, the biggest, and the best.
A jury's still out on some of that part. But you do play as them in this game. We talked about the lore a little bit of the that you do play as the guy from the first game.
Okay, what's his name? Do you know his name now? Because we didn't know his name last time.
His name is Titus.
Okay, that is not the same as the books. Got it.
I believe
books about Space Marines, and they focus with about every Space Marine chapter. There's tons of books, but there's ones about the Ultramarines, and the main character in that one is Uriel, like the angel, right? Mm-hmm. I think his last name was Ventress. I don't know why I remember this. We're not going to talk about what happens in the first, second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth books, all of which I remember for some insane reason. He's part of the Death Watch, JJ.
Oh, so he's not in the Ultramarines. The Death Watch are a separate thing.
Well, he got sent to the Death Watch for bad reasons, which is why you get sent to the Death Watch.
But Titus was also sent to the Death Watch, it turns out.
I wonder why, yeah.
At the end of the last game for...
Bad reasons?
I mean, he was doing good things. You played as him, and you had a punch-out fight with a demon prince.
Oh, so they put him they put him in charge of the Death Watch.
They said reasonable, in the reasonable logic of Warhammer 40K that,
yes, well,
you fought a Daemon Prince, so you've definitely been tainted by chaos. So you definitely gotta go over
Death
here.
Death Watch. See you later.
Yeah. And this game opens with you as a leader of a squad in the Death Watch, and you gotta, do your little mission. And it ends with you being killed by a Carnifex stabbing you through the heart.
Oh, spoilers?
This is the first mission. It's the tutorial. You can click skip on it if you want.
Do I get to play the rest of the game as a dreadnought?
No, you then play the rest of the game as Titus resurrected through the Primaris Rubicon surgery.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
And he comes back as a Primaris and is back in the Ultramarines.
Oh. Uh-oh.
So... The story begins.
Yeah, the story begins. You're going to find out a little bit more than you want to know about Primaris Marines, I think.
Yeah. not as much here to talk. I mean, the lore is fun to chat about.
I'm just saying, the only people that know how to make Primaris Marines are the Adeptus Mechanicus, so nothing could go wrong.
Yeah, definitely not. I'm sure everything's fine.
Mm-hmm.
All hail the Omnissiah, right?
Right.
Which is definitely the Emperor, as they say.
Has he met Marnius Kalgar yet? Or is he dead?
No.
I don't even know where he's at these days. What does a chapter master do when the...
Kalgar's name has been mentioned multiple times, but he has not shown up yet. The thing I want to talk about is the game is really cool. Like, I'm really enjoying it. It's,
third person, first person.
Third person. But you got a lot of, they really nailed the feel of these big lumbering dudes with really powerful attacks.
Yeah. So Michael, I think they're even taller nowadays, but imagine Shaq and then clad him in 4 to 5 inches of armor.
Okay.
That has a gigantic nuclear reactor strapped to the back of it to give it power.
And that's a regular Space Marine to a human. And
that's a normal Space Marine.
And then a Primaris Marine is 8 feet tall instead of 6.5 or 7 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And is even bigger and then has redundant organs or something ridiculous. I don't know.
All right.
They're slowly and surely becoming Klingons, Andy.
GMO people is pretty cool.
All that leads to in the game is, you have various melee attacks for fighting the hordes of Tyranids that are swarming you all the time. A surprisingly in-depth combo system with both light and heavy attacks that do armor breaking.
Oh, yeah. That's a thing in 40K, Michael. It's hand-to-hand combat is really actually very effective instead of just standing and shooting at each other.
Okay, I like that as a wrinkle.
Some of
it's a wrinkle because,
it would be very boring as a tabletop game if you just sort of lined all your people up, you know?
Right. Yeah.
The you know, the in-universe conceit is that, hey, the armor is so good, like, actually, it turns out sometimes melee weapons are better at cracking it because you could imbue the melee weapons with, you know, lightning or whatever.
A little bit of a Dune type vibe, you know, like from range, high impact projectiles are blocked by this shield.
Yeah. So, you know, I haven't experienced all of the weapons yet, but I've seen them on the like armory screen, that you get to at some points. Assuming maybe there are more even beyond what they showed me, but you know, you have your standard chain sword, which is the, you know, Michael, it is what you think. It is a chainsaw, but a sword.
Okay. Nice.
You have a little combat knife, as one of the options, which, you know, again, you still use it to kill in the same kind of ways, but the attacks are much quicker. It has longer combo strings. And the other big melee weapon I've gotten is I'm making a motion with my hand that I can't.
The Deathclaw, Power Fist.
No.
The Power Sword.
The Power Sword and the Thunder Hammer are both in there. I've seen them in the screen, but they haven't given me one yet.
Okay. Plasma Pistol.
What's the other one? Yeah, you can get a Plasma Pistol. So I guess, like, talking about the actual weapons, right? You have a, for your gun side, you're always allowed to carry a melee weapon. Whether that's like a big Power Fist or a knife or a chainsword or whatever other ones that I'm sure they'll let me have eventually.
Yeah.
And then you have both a heavy type weapon and a like small pistol-y type weapon.
Okay. Bolter.
Many different types of bolters. not even just a pistol, right? So like, you know, a standard bolt pistol, but then there's a heavy bolt pistol. There's a plasma weapon. There's a, you know, and they all have like different statistics. It's like, oh, the rate of fire on this plasma one is really slow, but you can charge it and that does a bunch of damage, right?
Yeah. Can they overheat and melt your entire hand?
They definitely can overheat. And then, you know, kind of like you have to go, and like deal with, you know, the fact that it's overheating on you and you can't reload. You know, and then the guns are, it's like, oh, you have a bolt rifle, which is, you know, you're like a 3-shot kind of with a very slight zoom kind of a weapon. There's a bolt sniper rifle there, which, you know, does what a sniper rifle does.
They got the Melta in there.
That is like one of the class of like weird, like heavy weapons, quote unquote, that you can pick up that just sort of like replace your both weapons, and you kind of just have they have a full auto machine gun bolter, right? That like full thing, so where the barrel spins up and all of that, and like you can't do anything else while you're using those, right?
They use the word bolter, Michael, because all of these shoot bolts instead of bullets, and they're basically projectile miniature grenades.
Okay, yeah.
That's their standard weapon. It goes up from there in ridiculousness.
Yeah, you know, then there's all kinds of crazy, like, you know, kinds of hellfire ammunition which explodes and like all.
Talking about this stuff really makes me love 40K and reminds me why I played the tabletop game for so long. It's fantastic and ridiculous.
The thing about this game is it super duper is nailing the fiction and the like lore and all of that stuff. You know, you land on a planet with some Imperial Guard, and the Space Marines come out, and it's not like you're like on a level with these people. You're like 2 feet taller than them. So you're like looking down at these like short little people, you know, and they're just like rolling with it. Like, oh, we're saved. You're here, my lord. Like, you'll fix this.
That's funny.
Like, you know, later, like, you hear people going like, I can't believe we fought alongside a Space Marine and we didn't die.
very, you know, good.
It's very good. And there's, the other thing that I've really liked, and I've only seen one instance of this, but I think it's like this for the rest of these. There are these PvE operations missions You know, it's the whole game is multiplayer, so you can have people join your squad for the campaign, and also for these other PvE repeatable missions.
Oh.
In the PvE missions, you get to customize your character a lot more. You have, like, there's classes, and they all have different weapons and different skills and all this kind of stuff, and you can, you know, level them up and unlock new weapons and new customizations and all kinds of, you know, that whole kind of thing. But, you know, you can pick different Space Marine chapters at that point. You can be, you know, a whole bunch of different choices on that side. But those missions dovetail with the story.
Oh.
And so as you're proceeding with the story, you get to a point where it's like, Captain, you know, the captain tells you, Titus, you know, we're going to break into two squads and they're going to do this to set you up and you're going to do this other thing. And the squad doing that other thing is the operations mission that you can play.
Can you then go back to, do you miss stuff by doing that other operation? How do you play it? Do you pause the main game? What?
So there is a,
how do you get into there?
So there, the game kind of gives you like a little marker over one of the terminals and you can go in and hit it and it will take you to the different game mode where you can like, you know, set up and do that. You know, it obviously doesn't have any story implications other than like they do the thing and then your mission is allowed to go forward or whatever. Right.
Okay.
But it doesn't, you know, crucially, if you don't want to do it, it doesn't stop you and make you do it.
You can just, it's just, you know, like go forward with the story. Happened.
Yeah. Sure. But if you do want to do it, that's a really cool way to tie the like, you know, PvE mission into the campaign a little bit. And then it's like, hey, you know, if you want to play these, it's fine. Like, you could just go play these other PvE missions if you want. But, like, be aware you're going to spoil some of the story for yourself because it's going to talk about that stuff.
Got it.
If you haven't gotten there, maybe don't do it. Right?
Clever integration.
Yeah. And they do have a way for you to be like, I don't care. Let me play the stupid mission. Right? If you just want to be like, you know, I want to do this or whatever. And then that's, then, you know, from that same terminal where you go do these operations PvE missions, there's the way to enter the PvP stuff also, which it has PvP fights for people that want to do that.
I don't really.
I want to try it, but yeah, I'm not. Yeah.
You know?
It is cool, though, because you get to play as the Chaos Marines in that one. So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, no offense to people that do want to play them. I get it, but I'm just kind of beat up, man, from too much PvP as a thing for a while.
Yeah. That's why it's nice when you can, you know, take out your anger on some Xenos and just let them know by blowing up their entire squad with a giant grenade or whatever.
That's all you need. Well, if people have other things that they want to do to Xenos, where should they send those? PG-13 or under?
PG-13 would be podcast@wewergamers.com. Yeah. podcast@wewergamers.com, our email.
Put those suggestions in a bolt rifle and fire them our way.
Near us.
Yeah. In our general area, not directly at us, please.
Over there, please. But, you know, we do want to hear from you.